You're listening to the Missionary Perspective Podcast with veteran missionaries Eric Johnson and Joshua Mead. We're glad you could join us. We trust this podcast will be both a blessing and a challenge as we relate topics in world evangelism from a missionary perspective. Now, here's Josh and Eric.
Welcome to the first ever in-person Missionary Perspective Podcast. Josh, if you had told me years ago when we started this podcast that the very first time we would have an in-person podcast, it would be in Martinsburg, West Virginia, in a Red Roof Inn, I never would have believed it. But here we are, finally at last, after over 16 years face-to-face having a podcast together.
When you mentioned that, when I came over and we got together, I thought it'd been sooner than that. I thought we've seen each other before that, but it really has been 16 years from when we went to the mission field. We finished deputation together. We were at my home church, our sending church, and that was kind of the last time that we connected. And we've stayed in touch over the years, and I've always followed. There was a group of about four or five of us that did deputation together. We were in candidate school the same time. It was December of 2005 when we were approved, and we followed each other's ministries over the years. I've always wanted to come to Dominican Republic and visit the ministry there, but I've always stayed up to date. We've stayed in touch. But then with the podcast, just really allowed us to reconnect and stay in touch that way. And I had thought somewhere along the way we reconnected, but a lot of you do shorter deputations, go back and listen to those episodes. We've covered all of that already. And sometimes we'll do longer, sometimes shorter. But we've just never been able to cross paths. And so here we are. Now, did you grow up in this area?
I did. I was born in Maryland, but grew up majority of my years here in Martinsburg, West Virginia. And it's just along the Eastern Panhandle line. So it's technically West Virginia, but we're kind of in between Virginia and Maryland, Pennsylvania. But it's still very much West Virginia. If you just go down the road to Walmart, you will be sure of that.
Yeah, exactly. No, it's good. This is, you asked me it's really neat. You asked me when I was coming here, do you have any churches in West Virginia that support you? And I didn't know of any until just a couple weeks ago. There's a church that just randomly began to support us. And as I'm driving here, I passed the city they're in. I thought, hey, they're here in West Virginia. I didn't realize they were in West Virginia. I knew what city, but I never put two and two together. So I don't get to West Virginia a whole lot, but we have several churches in the DC area that support us. And so it worked out to be able to connect today and spent some time yesterday together, reconnecting in person. My family is back in Michigan, and so we're hoping as a family to get together. But it's good to see your kids and to see your wife again and just see how well they're doing. How is your home assignment or your furlough going?
It's going very good. We're loving being home. We've been able to do a lot of fun activities. For me, the most fun and enjoyable and relaxation part has been reconnecting with friends. Some trips, we don't necessarily get to see a lot of missionary friends or pastoral friends, maybe just reporting to churches or doing different activities. But this trip has been very intentional for that. And so for us, it's been just a great rejuvenation in our spirit to see people like yourself who've been just faithful in the ministry, working what the Lord has for them in different spots. And sharing those testimonies, it got us very excited about going back and serving the Lord. And I'm very thankful you took time out of your time, your day, to come close to us so we could spend time together. And that's really important. I want to encourage guys who are listening, maybe who are starting on the mission field. You know, one of those times when you come home on furlough, it's really important that you reconnect with either supporting pastors, friends maybe you had before, or especially missionary friends. And there's just nothing like sharing missionary stories. In fact, yesterday, we took Josh out, and he was at my parents' house for a while. We went out to eat, and then we went back to my parents' house. And I think we spoke for about 6 hours, and I thought, man, if we could have recorded that that time, we really just talked a lot about missions and the Lord. And so it's always good to have good friends. And that's one of the topics we're going to do today is really to talk about our excitement, our enthusiasm, as we've been home on furlough, you for a long time, me for a couple of short ones. What makes us excited still today about world evangelism? Yeah. You know, we've got a long list, and I'm sure there's a much longer, exhaustive list we could have, and we're only going to touch on some of the capstones, but there's a lot to be excited about in the area of world evangelism, and that's what we want to kind of talk about a little bit today. But before we get there, tell us about a little bit some of the things you wanted to share as far as your experiences along the way in furlough, maybe some books and things and people you've met.
Yeah, well, first of all, I'm looking at the video here, and I'm like towering up here. So I'm
not that much shorter.
I'm gonna see. No, my chair won't lower. So he's in a shorter chair here. I'm in a computer desk chair.
Classic tower move by Josh today.
That's right. Kind of towering over here. All right. Our little makeshift studio here. Yeah, and that's too. I'm excited about the topic today. We're just going to kind of talk about our experiences with home assignment, and not really, we're not getting into like we did in our last furlough video, talking about some of the technical aspects and raising funds and doing videos and things like that. We're going to talk about what we enjoy about it and just kind of what, you know, personally you enjoy about coming back, traveling throughout the States. And I would say things like this, like you mentioned, just being able to connect with other missionaries is a big one. And being able to connect with you and your family. And I love it when we travel, Eric. I love when we're in a mission conference, and I maybe visit more mission conferences than you do, because sometimes when we come back, we're on longer stretches. So when I do get to go to a mission conference, I love meeting other younger missionaries who are on deputation, and just getting around that passion and fervor. And, you know, as a veteran missionary, which I guess we are, we've been on the field for, almost two decades, we've been doing this. And so seeing that fervor and passion and saying, man, don't ever lose that. Don't lose that fervor. Don't lose that passion for missions and for what God's called you to do. But also as a veteran looking and saying, you have no idea what you're in store for when you hit the reality of working on the mission field. But just being able to encourage them that, you know, whatever trials you've been through, whether personal trials or just trials that come along with just simply working in a foreign field, being able to encourage those that we meet who are on deputation, raising support, that you are going to face some difficulties and adjustments, but it's worth it if you'll maintain that enthusiasm, that excitement. And when you come back and be able to report what God has done, it's an exciting thing to be a part of this thing we call world evangelism, right? And so I think this was the first topic we were going to touch on, was you had written, it's still, why I'm excited about world evangelism. It's still the hope for mankind. It really is, right? Now we see, and we were talking about this last night, there are a lot of missions that do under the category of world missions, right, or world evangelism. There are a lot of missions that are doing works in developing countries. They have personnel there, and they are engaging in a lot of humanitarian or social, not, I guess, social activities, social helps, development. Now, I think those are a good thing. When I look at the ministry of Jesus, I see that he would heal people, and he addressed people's medical needs by bringing healing, and he would feed people. And so he addressed those humanitarian aspects because we are people with needs. We are human beings who have areas in our life that need to be addressed. And a lot of times, if you want to share the gospel with somebody, you need to reach them through their need, because many times in developing countries, people aren't as concerned maybe about thinking about eternity when they're just trying to survive and eat tomorrow, live another day. So I think that those outreaches, those type of aspect, that aspect of world evangelism is important. But I've noticed, and I think maybe you see it as well, that there's kind of been a move where a lot of missions, and maybe it's people not responding in world evangelism, or people not many people responding in difficult areas getting saved, that's almost become the primary emphasis rather than church planting and seeing churches planted. What do you mean by world evangelism's the hope of mankind? Does that include addressing people's needs? Or is it simply they just need Jesus and then we move on and not help with any of those humanitarian areas? I wanted to try to approach it maybe that way.
So I think when I was, when it popped in my mind, I was thinking of maybe even a little bit further back, thinking about when we turn on the nightly news, we read the internet headlines, I think we can be very discouraged by what's going on in the world. maybe even more so than ever, wars, rumors of wars, difficulties. If you go into these third world countries, seeing the difficulties people face. But as a believer, understanding as times get more difficult, you know, the message of Christ, message of the cross is still the only hope. As we come up with new ideas, and as you mentioned, you know, there's nothing wrong with meeting physical needs. I've even been more encouraged lately as we've branched out in some different things in the Dominican of using that compassion that we have for lost people by meeting those physical needs. And it definitely has its place. But what I'm talking about is just that spiritual need is that as everyone in the world to this day is seeking after different things to give them peace, to give them contentment, give them joy. And we know everything in this world that's man-made will never fulfill that. And as we come up with new methods of everything in our world, the preaching of the cross, the preaching of Jesus Christ is still that hope. And, you know, I'm just more excited than ever that as we were speaking, the greatest need in these areas is a New Testament church which teaches them the gospel, that they can see their lives transformed, and by that, their families are transformed, and by that, their communities transformed. It's very simple message of the cross. It's a powerful message. But oftentimes, and you know, you and I are people, I would like to think in most ways, I mean, the cutting edge of a lot of different things when it comes to missions and methods and ideas and philosophies. We aren't necessarily stuck in our ways by any means. But at the same time, I'm excited as I go to a church in West Virginia or a church in California or a church in Senegal or Dominican Republic. You know, the message is the same. It's the preaching of the cross and that we need to, you know, accept Christ as our Savior, to become His disciple, and then to see our lives transformed and then see our families transformed, our communities transformed. Like, that hasn't changed. And the world's changing. And you know, if you live in a post-pandemic world, it's changed rapidly. Yeah. And but the good news is Jesus doesn't change. The message doesn't change. And I'm excited about that. And I think maybe it's part of getting older. I think as we get older, you do start to fear change a little bit more. You know, your kids grow up. I mean, when we met, it was funny. We were talking about that. You know, we didn't have any kids.
Yeah.
You know, now we have kids that are in high school age. Kids are looking into college. You know, as we get older, we will, I think, just naturally fear changes more. But one thing that hasn't changed is the only hope for mankind. It's not just world evangelism. The only hope for world kind is Jesus Christ.
That's right.
And that vehicle for us to hear about Him is through world evangelism. And that just always makes me excited.
And I'm more and more convinced if the planting and cultivation of churches is not part of your world evangelism philosophy and part of your ultimate goal, because Jesus is the hope of the world. And when we first got to Senegal, of course, with the support you raise, you have resources at your disposal to develop and cultivate different methods of outreach that would address sometimes those needs that we have. Maybe we'll build a well, we'll dig a well in a village that is an Islamic village, but that will be a tool or a means by which we can get in there and share the gospel. We built a school in a village and we can use that building now to be able to go out there and show films that we produce and share the gospel and eventually maybe hold meetings there. And so the longer I've been on the mission field, though, the more convinced that the reality has always been there in scriptures is that while we can use these humanitarian outreach to help address people's needs, it opens people's heart. It needs to be directly connected to either the purpose of getting a church planted, because if you're just going to dig a well so people have clean water, but then you leave and never do any evangelism, discipleship, yeah, they'll say, hey, those Christians were nice people, but we've got our faith and we're going to continue in our faith. And in fact, as we've engaged and encountered in Islam, working with sometimes Quranic schools, a lot of times I've heard imams tell the students after we've come and done an outreach, and we always, Malik, our lead pastor, he tells the imam, we have to be able to share the gospel about Jesus. Otherwise, we're going to take our outreach, our food, we're going to give medical, and we'll go to somewhere else. So we have that conviction that we're not going to just feed you and we're not just going to help address these needs unless we can share why. And I'm glad we have a pastor in Senegal who has that conviction that we need to be able to share the love of Christ. Because what has happened, he said, was ministries would come in, do those humanitarian outreach, maybe feed those kids and then leave. And then the imam would get up and say, see how Allah provided, even through the infidels, Allah provided for us. And they go, oh, you know, alhamdulillah, praise be to Allah for using the infidels to feed us. And so Malik said, we're not going to allow that. They need to hear why we're doing it. And I've just become more convinced that if when a church is planted, that Jesus is the hope of mankind. Yeah. And he's given us this calling to represent him and to preach Christ, to make Christ known. And the product of planting the gospel is churches being started. And when a community of believers is created, and we teach our church as a community of believers, many of them have been kicked out of their family. Many of them have been ostracized. Some have lost their job. And so we have to band together as a family. And when you read the book of Acts, how everybody had all things common, that those who had a little bit more were able to help those who had nothing. You see this little economy, even if it's a small church, this economy of a family of followers of Christ who have a passion to see their family and friends saved, but they're taking care of each other in a way that Muslims within the Islamic community, they take care of each other. But then they see, wait a second, we cut you off from everything. We've shamed you, all this and that. And yet you've still banded together. And there's this little community of like heaven on earth is what it's supposed to be, really, taking care of one another. And that's how a community eventually, as that grows, that's how needs are addressed. Not just from the missionary bringing in resources, but when lives are transformed, and the church learns within the field, how on the field you're in, wait, we have a responsibility one to another. It's not just the missionary who's the bank here, who has money that I can go to draw from. We need to take care of one another. And so every outreach, we were talking about this last night, every time we help somebody who comes to us with a need, we always pass through our church. When we did the medical mission outreach, it was a outreach of the church. It wasn't the outreach of the missionary. The church was involved, and I love that medical mission outreach does that. They partner with local churches. I love that philosophy, because when they leave, it's not like, oh, you know, these guys from the States came in, they did a great job, and we're thankful for it. But the long-term impact, you won't see long-term impact or transformation unless there's nationals on the ground, a church on the ground that's going to continue to cultivate that open door. So I love being a part of world evangelism because of that partnership, the partnership with those who have sent you, are supporting churches through when they come on the field. You host a lot of teams. We have about four or five teams lined up this year. I love the partnership of being able to give our supporters a taste of world evangelism and to come in and experience what it's like to do what they're doing on the States, only in a cross-cultural context. And I love it when they realize it's the same as what we're doing. Yep. And a lot go back even more in passion, you know, to go back and get more involved in their local church and to get more involved in outreach in their local areas. A lot of people will come and say, hey, we actually have needs in our area. We've got poor people. We've got people in needs. And so let's step up our game on, you know, a stateside. And then when that's processed through the local church, then the church begins to strengthen the community. Needs are met. But what's most important is lives are transformed by the gospel of Jesus Christ.
You know, we're going to talk a little bit later about things we're excited about, maybe more in intricate ways like creativity and technology. And those things do excite me. We'll talk about that a little later. But the one thing that doesn't change is the message of Jesus Christ and the cross. And I think as we get older and maybe as the world is spinning around us and things are changing, there's just a great comfort and peace knowing that, you know, there's a simplicity of what we need to do as missionaries. There's complications that arise about being a missionary and staying on a mission field and building a work, but the message is not. I'm thankful that, you know, the message of, you know, forgiveness of sins and finding peace in Jesus Christ is still the same. And it is true when groups come, there's almost, I don't know what they expected before they came, but it's very, very I don't know if funny is the right word, but just it's always whimsical, you might say, when they're like, wow, you sing Victory in Jesus, but in a different language, or, you know, you do church very much like we do. And it's like, well, you know, it's New Testament, it's the Bible. And so we're going to do it in maybe a different cultural context, and there are changes like that. But in its simplicity, it's done the same way. And same way we do church, that's just kind of the manifestation of what's coming through the gospel, being preached and taught and discipled, and really just becoming a mini Christ. And so for me, that's one of the very exciting things about coming home in deputation and having been on the mission field for so long, coming to churches, good churches, and being refreshed and saying, wow, it's the same message. So maybe transitioning to the second part, one of the things that has brought excitement to me is that God's still calling young people to the mission field. And young people are still responding. You know, we may feel young in our spirits, but we're not as young as we used to be. When we first met, I was trying to do the math. I think you were like 24. I think I was like 27. You might have been 23.
No, I was 23.
23. I was 27. That was many moons ago. And, you know, though we still have vigor and love and we, for the Lord, and we want to keep going, I think we understand as you get older, there are limitations, and you have to be replacing yourself. And so I think we know in a simple mindset, it wasn't that God never stopped calling people, but as a veteran missionary, it does get you excited. It gets me excited when I see young people, young couples, young ladies, young men responding to the call to go to places. And oftentimes, I don't know what it is about this new generation, oftentimes very difficult areas. You know, it's not necessarily, we think sometimes this generation gets a bad rap for wanting all the comfort, creature comforts and things like that, but even being willing to go to very difficult areas. And so what have been some of your experiences? You're on the road quite often in these maybe universities and meeting young people. How has that been an encouragement to you?
I've been excited to see with the younger generation, and this has always been when we got to Senegal, as we begin to see needs that we have that I would love to see addressed. In other words, I'd love to have men and women coming to join the mission work there that have specific skill sets that can help fill a gap. But I'm convinced you need to know your call of God. If you're a young man and you're going to go to the mission field, you need to know that you have a calling. I think Paul spoke to that when he said, you know, the Lord separated me from my mother's womb. In other words, I think, and we were talking about this last night, I think God is still calling young people, and calling in general. I'll share in a minute. There's a couple that's at retirement age are coming to work in Gambia and Senegal. Yeah. And I'm really excited about that. I'll share that in a minute. But I'm excited for some of the young people I've met as I've traveled who have, for example, media is... So I think the way we talked about last night, the way I worded it is I'm convinced with Islamic evangelism specifically, and that's what we work in, that I think you'd be far better off having nobody come to get in the work than having the wrong person come. Absolutely. There are definite challenges, and there are definite obstacles that you have to face trying to work in Islamic evangelism. And I really feel like Islamic evangelism is kind of like the last frontier of world evangelism that we haven't addressed. And it's we're getting there. I'm meeting more and more people. I've seen a tone shift from when we were in the field, college. I was in college when 9/11 happened. Yeah. We raised support, our first couple furloughs. I would have discussions with well-meaning Christians who prefaced it with, I know I'm supposed to love all people, but they say, I have a real hard time loving Muslims. Yeah. And I get it. If you're a patriotic American, you sometimes blur the lines between patriotism and you see people who hate our country, blur the lines with love. You're called to love and have compassion on those who are our enemies. So I get that. But with what I've seen with Islamic evangelism is there are challenges. And it's really like the Wild West of missions. You can't come in, I feel this way, you can't come into Islamic evangelism with kind of preconceived notions of how missions is supposed to be done. You can't come in with this box of this is how it's supposed to be done, this is how we're going to do it. Now, I think Charles Keene wrote a book years ago called Thinking Outside the Box. what I appreciate about it is the box is a good thing. That's kind of like the frame of reference, basic principles that you need to follow that you don't compromise. Right. And so what I always tell young people in Islamic evangelism, there are certain, you'll become, the deeper you get into Islamic evangelism, the more, the deeper you get into being able to defend your faith and you get stronger on certain doctrines. You're like, oh man, like I approached it from their perspective, because they're always attacking the Trinity and the deity of Christ. And did Jesus really die on the cross? And why would some God require somebody else to die in my place? And as you're constantly addressing these, you're digging deeper into the scriptures and you just become more grounded in your theology and in your doctrine. And so I think with Islamic evangelism, there's a depth, and I love it. I love how you can dig deeper into these doctrines that are necessary. And then you have to be able to kind of regurgitate them and spit them out in a way that's simplified for those who bring complex questions, but they don't want a complex answer. They want a simple answer. Otherwise, they just plug their ears and walk away. And so what I'm seeing is, in our churches, I'm seeing people come. I've had so many people come to me this furlough and say, I have a Muslim neighbor. How do I reach them? One lady, she said, there's a mosque they just built in my neighborhood, and I've been circling it every day praying. What do I do to like engage them now? And I said, man, that's the first step. You know, you pray. And so I've been meeting so many people in churches that are realizing what Muslims are here and we need to engage them, not be fearful. And then I'm meeting a lot of young people that are really open to Islamic evangelism. And what I love about the younger generation is there's still a pioneer spirit, because the ones who are open and surrendered to the call of God do kind of have more of that pioneer spirit. I don't think we're seeing as many young people surrender to missions as maybe we did in the past, but the quality of young person that is surrendering and the passion and then the skill sets that they have. You know, I've met so many young people that are wanting to go to the mission field, and yet they have skills within media. They have skills with different areas that they've cultivated these different skill sets, because today with the internet, YouTube, you can learn any skill, right? You can learn to develop, and really without a college degree, you can really learn to do anything. And so I'm excited about the future of missions, and I'm excited to see how I believe over the past couple decades, there's been a paradigm shift within the emphasis of world evangelism on the field. And that is, I think we're seeing nationals in a lot of places stepping out of the shadows, so to say, and taking the lead, but they still have limited resources. Right. And specifically, again, my frame of reference is Islamic evangelism. You know, I've talked to a pastor who said, we have 11 imams. He's a missionary, spent 40 years on the field in North Africa. He said, we have 11 imams. Just with a Bible translation and a radio program, got saved and converted their mosque into churches. That's without a missionary on the field. So what do we need missionaries? Yes, they need to be trained. They need to partner with the nationals. God is at work in the Islamic world. Thousands are being saved. And now what is needed is somebody to come in and help to set up this structure in this kind of organic growth. It's like, man, God's at work. And so there's this field. It's like when Jesus saw the Samaritans coming out in John 4, and he told his disciples, I'm sending you to labor where you bestowed no labor. Other men have labored. You're entering into their labors. You're getting the easy part. I think we're about, and I'm, again, my frame of reference is Islamic evangelism. I think we're about to enter into that area that Jesus was talking about, the easy part. We are benefiting from at least 50 years in Senegal of men and women and families coming and laboring with very little fruit. And now he's bringing in other men. We were there, and others that are there with different skill sets than what the old school missionaries had, different approaches, but still the same biblical convictions. And we're seeing fruit that I think has been unprecedented in the times past, not because we're doing anything differently than the old missionaries did. It's because they labored, and now we're reaping the benefits of that labor.
Well, this may not be the perfect illustration, but think of it in this way. I mean, we don't fight wars the same way we did in World War II. if you remember the famous movies when they were storming Normandy,
you'd
have these guys and the walls would go down and they would mow them down and hopefully some guys made it to the shore and they took, and these were amazing men that had courage that you and I probably just can't fathom. Today, we don't fight wars like that. We're very much more strategic. We have different useful weapons and we can still win wars. And I think, you know, young people, it's not rebellious for them to have this new generation where they're asking good questions and they're getting different answers and they're thinking, well, how can I reach thousands, if not tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands through some kind of media? And we're going to talk about that. You know, I've been encouraged the last number of years, our particular mission board, BIMI, has something called Camp BIMI, where people come together and they learn from other missionaries like yourself and I, and they hear testimonies, they learn, you know, what it's going to be like, and they get encouragement. And for me to hear that this generation, the last 2 years, I think even now this third year, is going to be some of the biggest Camp BIMIs they've ever had.
Yes.
And I know there are other organizations that have things similarly like that. That does give me encouragement, though it is true anecdotally when we aren't seeing as many missionary couples maybe out on the deputation trail. I think there is a quality that of kids that are asking the right kind of questions that when they do feel that call and they respond to it, I believe we're going to see some amazing successes in the next number of years. And, you know, that I think that's also something why Josh and I have always felt this need to even have this podcast is that over the years, we've gotten lots of questions from those kind of missionaries on the way. And we felt like maybe we didn't have as much mentorship. We did have some, but I think that is, you know, us, the 40s, 50s, 60-year-old missionaries, we need to be really going back to these generations and mentoring them, encouraging them, telling them they are going to be able to make it. There are going to be difficulties, but there is reward. And I think that's what gives me excitement when I think about these young people being called in the ministry. Now, the other side of that coin, Josh, is that though we are veteran missionaries, there are a lot of missionaries and pastors that are older than us that we might call, I'm skipping one. We'll get coming up in a minute. In my order here, there are younger pastors. Let's just continue on that vein. There are younger pastors and like-minded pastors that are replacing, we'll call them seasoned or veteran pastors. When Josh and I started Deputation Trail, we had got to go into a lot of great churches that love the Lord, that are very successful, spiritually speaking, missions-minded. And yet when we were in our mid to late 20s, a lot of these pastors were in their 50s and 60s 20 years ago. And as we have aged and come home on furloughs, I know there have been times we've discussed it where we might have even had some fears for those churches. How are they going to transition in their leadership roles? And for me, like I said, just anecdotally, going through our supporting churches, it's been such an encouragement the last couple of years to come home and meet pastors in their 30s and their 40s who have taken the baton from these veterans and made the transition in leadership and are staying on the, you know, just great doctrine, great truth, and maybe even in some ways understanding the times and how people want to know from the Bible some answers that maybe the previous generations would just say, bless God, we're going to do it this way. And because of a previous, maybe World War II generation, people just obeyed. There are a new generation of Christians that I believe rightfully have the question to say, well, why do we do the church this way? Why do we have this principle? Why do we have this philosophy? And to be around many of these pastors now, to see them having taken those questions, giving right answers, and continue to lead the flock in the right direction. For me personally, it's been very exciting. Have you seen things like that in your experience?
Absolutely. And I think the difference in the generational changes, because a pastor, and I think a lot of some of the older generations, when they reached retirement age and retirement, you know, from ministry, but when they reached an age where, you know, really I can't pastor this church, but they realized we didn't prepare anybody to take over this church. And so I think when they did bring in guys who eventually took it over, they had an awareness that I need to make sure I'm cultivating, preparing somebody. I was just in a church, Pastor Todd. You go back and listen to one of the most recent podcasts we did with Pastor Todd Harrison. He's already, now he's not planning on retiring, or he's still young, you know, but he's already planning on developing a young man, and his prayers that he'll take the church one day. He's got that long-term vision to make sure there's a smooth transition. And what I love about when I say younger generation of pastors who are my age, 50s maybe in their 30s, who are taking over the churches that have been supporting us for years. What I'm excited to see is that there is a mission, there's a mission heart of these pastors, because they're realizing, all right, if you go back a generation, if you went and knocked on somebody's door, said, hey, do you know if you're going to heaven? And they say, well, I know about Jesus and I know he died on the cross, and maybe they never made a personal decision, but you don't have to go through a whole theological training. They have a point of reference that right there, you lead them to Christ. A lot of pastors I talk to, they're realizing we're knocking on doors and say, hey, did anybody ever tell you about Jesus? Who's Jesus, right? I was just in a place in North Carolina and we went to a door and they said, nah, what's Jesus? I don't know. Like, what's that all about? And it's just, I think pastors, this younger generation is realizing if we're going to impact our community, we need to become missionary. Yeah. If we're going to reach America, we are in a postmodern culture where we've abandoned in our schools. It's already happened. It's too late. There's no going back. We are impacting and reaching a generation that has no point of reference of who Jesus is. And so you have to rethink how you're going to share the gospel even with somebody who doesn't even know what Jesus is all about. And our communities are becoming more diverse with immigration and influx of those from other cultures 100%. That pastors are realizing as well, man, I need to figure out, how do I reach a Hindu? How do I reach a Muslim? So what I've loved since being back is seeing that mission spirit with the pastors. I'm doing a few, I've been invited, and at missions conferences I've gone to, I've been asked to either do a Q&A on Islamic evangelism. I'm going to a church in Canada and they're going to do a seminar on Islamic evangelism that I've prepared a message on a Saturday. They'll invite churches in the area. Pastors are realizing we've got to be able to reach people, because the questions Muslims are bringing, we don't know how to answer. Like, well, how do we address this? And so I'm really excited about that. Just this heart of, hey, I love what our pastor in Senegal, what he would say. He would say, we love and appreciate what the missionaries in the past had done, but they're not here anymore. We need to step up and take the leadership now. And with that comes certain challenges, and there comes different perspectives while maintaining that identity in Christ, while standing on the same convictions. And I think the older generation, the seasoned pastors, I think many of them have come to accept, yeah, the younger generation, they might do things differently than we do them, but if you've trained them on the rock of Jesus Christ, those convictions are still there, but it's going to look different. We talked about this last night, Eric, would you agree? People don't understand the variety of flavor of Independent Baptist Church. You know, when you think Independent Baptist, a lot of times you think, yeah, every church is like my church. That is not the case. I would venture to say the Independent Baptist Church is probably the most diverse range of style of churches while maintaining similar convictions, right?
Absolutely.
And I love that, because I think that's as close to that is biblical Christianity, the unity and the diversity, right?
Well, it's funny you're mentioning this, because the diversity, you know, 20 years ago, I was living in Northern Virginia before we were missionaries, and that area is very close to Washington, D.C., and it was very diverse. And in fact, I was a minority in my neighborhood. You know, it was from India, it was from Pakistan, right. It was from, just other parts of the world, Ethiopia. And so I understood that when I was called to the mission field, the great need. Well, that was in a very suburban, you know, close to a metro area. You know, my in-laws live in rural, it's less rural now, but rural Georgia. And that world, that immigration, you know, just the people from moving to different countries, has come to the rural areas. When we used to preach, I know I used to have this challenge when I would go to a church where I knew the median age was going to be 67.
Right.
And it was hard to think, well, how am I going to encourage these people to go be missionaries? I know they're not going to be able to go do that physically. Well, nowadays, it's not that difficult at all to explain to someone, listen, you live close to somebody who's come from another part of the world, who, as you mentioned, if they know the name of Jesus, they've heard it maybe as a curse word or some kind of, you know, they have no concept of who he was and, right. and what he was about. And, you know, but I was thinking about people who have encouraged young pastors. For instance, my father-in-law doesn't speak any other languages. He has visited us on occasions, but, you know, he's a very very much a person who lived in his area of Georgia. Well, you know, he goes out now when he has door hangers and he'll go out and do evangelism. If he meets someone, and he's a pretty guy, not very much an extrovert, but he will take opportunity. If he sees someone who's Hispanic, he'll try to talk to them. And then he'll make that connection that, oh, my kids are missionaries in the Dominican Republic. And, you know, I bet he never dreamed that he would be going to that length there in Jefferson, Georgia. Right. And I think that's the way that younger pastors are seeing that, not only for worldwide missions, people like you and I who get on airplanes and go to other places, but that the worldwide evangelism starts there at home. And the mission field has come to these local churches. And really, I think you and I understand, if those kind of people can get saved and they get the burden, they are going to have the greatest impact if the Lord calls them back to the mission field. There's a young man we support in Burkina Faso who is a Mexican. He went, he got the dream of all dreams. He went from Mexico to America. Then he got saved. And he was in a Baptist church and he got the call. And he speaks Spanish as his native language, probably was learning English, and got called to go to be a missionary in Africa, which meant he had to learn French. And so that's the kind of thing that gets us excited. But that can happen in every local New Testament church. And so I think what is being stoked, the fire is being stoked, is a lot of these young pastors who understand staying true, but having a world perspective on the need for Jesus Christ.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think we're going to wrap up this session. We're going to divide this up into a two-part series, just continuing the same discussion, similar topic. And I'm excited that we get to share this time together. And I hope you'll send in questions that you might have. And if you're a member of a church, we'd love to try to help out any way we can with sharing resources and content on how to engage your diverse community. Maybe you had somebody move in from an Islamic perspective, or maybe somebody just moved in from South America or from a Hispanic country. And so write in. We'd be glad to try to help. Or any questions you might have, please feel free to write in anytime. And if you think this will be a blessing to somebody, like we always say, like, share it, and leave a review on both whatever podcast platform you're listening to. If you're watching us, please be sure to like, subscribe, share it. And we want to try to be a blessing to as many people as we can.
And tell us what excites you about world evangelism. Yeah. I'm sure there's an exhaustive list that we can compile. We want to know why you're excited about telling others about Jesus Christ all around the world.
Well, be sure to tune in next week as we continue this discussion on what we're excited about right now in the current age of world evangelism, reaching people and the world for Jesus Christ. This is Josh Mead here in Martinsburg, West Virginia.
And Eric Johnson. Glad to be back in the Hillbilly State.
God bless. Have a great day.